The Torah content from now through Pesach has been sponsored by the Kofsky family in loving memory of Adira, who loved big ideas and asking big questions.
Hello, I'm Rabbi Matt Schneeweis, and this is the Stoic Jew podcast, where we explore the relationship between Judaism and Stoicism. Today's reading is from Marcus Aurelius' Meditations, Book 4, Paragraph 25. Make trial for yourself how the life of the good man, too, fares well, of the man who is satisfied with his portion out of the whole and contented by his own just action and kind disposition. So, very short reading. Obviously, my first association here is to Ben Zoma's statement in Pirkei Avos, Chapter 4, Mishnah 1, which is Ezehu Ashir Hasameach Bechelko, who is wealthy, one who is satisfied with his portion. And obviously, this is a very common theme in Judaism, especially in Koheles, as those who have been in my Koheles Shirim have found out. But what I think this is actually doing is I think Aurelius is elaborating on the previous meditation, where he talked about simplifying your life and cutting out what is unnecessary. And especially at the end, the yesterday's reading ended off by saying, "Wherefore, on each occasion, he should remind himself, is this not one of the necessary things? And he should remove not merely actions that are unnecessary, but imaginations also. For in this way, superfluous actions, too, will not follow in their train." So this idea of simplifying your life, not only by cutting out unnecessary actions directly, but also cutting out unnecessary imaginations or fantasies for things that you don't actually need or for things that are superfluous, that cuts out a whole swath of stresses and pains and pursuits and consequences that would have ordinarily plagued you. So one of the best elaborations on this that I've read is in the Rambam's Mor Nevuchim 3:12. The entire chapter is worth reading, but I'm just going to read this little excerpt here. He says, "The soul, when accustomed to superfluous things, acquires a strong habit of desiring things which are neither necessary for the preservation of the individual nor for that of the species. This desire is without a limit. Whilst things which are necessary are few in number and restricted within certain limits, what is superfluous is without end. For example, you desire to have your vessels of silver, but golden vessels are still better. Others have even vessels of sapphire, or perhaps they could be made of emerald or rubies or any other substance that could be suggested. Those who are ignorant and perverse in their thoughts are constantly in trouble and pain because they cannot get as much of superfluous things as a certain other person possesses. They, as a rule, expose themselves to great dangers, for example, by sea voyage or service of kings, and all this for the purpose of obtaining that which is superfluous and not necessary. When they thus meet with the consequences of the course which they adopt, they complain of the decrees and judgments of God. They begin to blame the time and wonder at the lack of justice in its changes, that it has not enabled them to acquire great riches, with which they could buy large quantities of wine for the purpose of making themselves drunk, and numerous concubines adorned with various kinds of ornaments of gold, embroidery, and jewels for the purpose of driving themselves to sexual indulgence beyond their capacities, as if the whole universe existed exclusively for the purpose of giving pleasure to these low people." Okay, so that's a very vivid depiction of like the life of desiring superfluous things, and you can see it's a chain reaction. You desire superfluous things, that causes pain from not having those things and pain from envy at the people who do have those things. The pursuit of those things causes you to take upon yourself additional tasks, chiefly probably making more money, but those tasks expose you to greater pains and greater consequences. And then when you don't get it, then it also causes you to blame God, to blame the universe, to blame circumstances, which causes you even more pain. So you can see that there's this whole world of pain that you attach yourself to through desire for superfluous things. And then because I had thought yesterday of Thoreau and Walden, which is something that I find myself doing in December and January of every year for some reason, for the last 10 years. I thought of another passage in Thoreau, which is another just amusing example of this, not quite as dramatic as the Rambam's. So this is in Walden in the chapter entitled Economy. So he's going to be talking here about one example of where people get caught up in what is superfluous. And that example is, is the condition of their clothing. So he says, no man ever stood the lower in my estimation for having a patch on his clothes. Yet I'm sure that there is greater anxiety commonly to have fashionable or at least clean and unpatched clothes than to have a sound conscience. But even if the rent is not mended, perhaps the worst vice betrayed is improvidence. I sometimes try my acquaintances by such tests as this. And by the way, that's how I got to this passage. I was thinking, I thought I remember Thoreau talking about trying your life by certain tests. And that's how I really started today's reading, make trial for yourself. So that was just my association. So he says, I sometimes try my acquaintances by such tests as this. Who could wear a patch or two extra seams only over the knee? Most behave as if they believe that their prospects for life would be ruined if they should do it. It would be easier for them to hobble to town with a broken leg than with a broken pantaloon. Often, if accident happens to a gentleman's legs, they can be mended. But if a similar accident happens to the legs of his pantaloons, there is no help for it. For he considers not only not what is truly respectable, but what is respected. So that's an example that it relates to what I talked about last week, Friday, about like the scuffing of the shield of my car. You know, like people get all bent out of shape when the shield of their car gets bent out of shape, and it's superfluous, it's unnecessary, you know, but yet they react to it as though it was an injury, you know. I also want to just mention here, just for the sake of clarifying both in Stoicism and in Judaism, that this emphasis on not caring about superfluous things should not be confused with asceticism, okay? And they look similar, right? It looks like in both cases, then what's being advocated is to like withdraw from worldly pleasures. But that's not the case. It's not the case in the Stoics, because the Stoics write, especially Seneca, they write a lot about how like we don't advocate withdrawing from pleasure. But what we do advocate is cultivating your relationship to pleasure and being able to go without it, but not withdrawing from it entirely. Stoicism is not asceticism. Similarly, in Judaism, Stoicism is not asceticism. And I think that the two paradigms, I guess, to keep here are the word for asceticism or ascetic practices that's often used in the Rishonim is precious, literally separation, but it means separation from worldly desires. And then the quality that Aurelius is focusing on here is, Aurelius uses the phrase sameach b'chelko, being happy with your portion, but the noun that is often used is histapkus, which means being content with your portion or being content with what is necessary. So again, you've got histapkus, which is contentedness with what's necessary, and then precious, which is separation from worldly desires. And if you look in Avraham ben Arambam's book, Hamaspik Le'ovdei Hashem, he actually has two separate chapters devoted to this. There's the Shar HaHistapkus, which is chapter 9, which is very short, ironically or thematically. And then chapter 10 is the Shar HaPrishus. And in the Shar HaHistapkus, he says explicitly, so the very fact that there are two chapters means that they're two separate traits, but he does say that they're related. And he says, Histapkus is the foundation and root of the trait of Precious. But then he clarifies, he says, everyone who is a Baal Precious is also a Baal Histapkus, but not everyone who is a Baal Histapkus is a Baal Precious. In other words, anyone who does engage in ascetic practices of withdrawing from worldly pleasures, by definition, is going to be someone who is able to be content, or at least is striving to be content with what they have and what is necessary. So that's every Baal Precious is a Baal Histapkus. But not every Baal Histapkus is a Baal Precious, meaning just because you have contented yourself with what's necessary and with your portion does not mean that you're going to withdraw from worldly pleasures. So I just wanted to clarify that, because I think it's very easy. I mean, the Rambam also talks about this in Hilchos Deos, at the beginning of chapter 3, that people who are engaged in, in working on the inner life, there are certain people who are drawn to asceticism, and the Rambam talks there about how the Torah is very against that. In fact, let me just read this. I didn't plan on reading this earlier, but let me just get it up here, because I think it is relevant. He says, I'm almost at my 10-minute time limit, so maybe we'll save this for another time. Okay, so that is it for today's episode. If you have gained from what you've learned here today and would like to support my production of even more Torah content, please consider contributing to my Patreon at www.patreon.com/rabbischneeweiss. The link is in the description. Thank you to my listeners for listening, and thank you to my patrons for supporting my efforts to make Torah ideas available and accessible to everyone.